Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22. Yeah. Prithu Maharaja's meeting with the Kumaras. Text 4. Gauravad yantrita sabhya prashrayanata kandhara vidhivat pujayam chakre grihitad yar hanasanam. Translation. When the great sages accepted their reception according to the instructions of the Shastras, and finally took their seats offered by the king. The king, influenced by the glories of the sages, immediately bowed down. Thus, he worshipped the four Kumaras. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The four Kumaras are parampara spiritual masters of the Vaishnav Sampradaya. Out of the four Sampradayas, namely Brahma Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya, Kumar Sampradaya, and Rudra Sampradaya, the disciplic succession of spiritual master to disciple, known as the Kumar Sampradaya, is coming down from the four Kumaras. So Prithu Maharaj was very respectful to the Sampradaya Acharyas. As it is said by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sakshat Hari Tvena Samasta Shastrai, a spiritual master or the Parampara Acharya should be respected exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word vidhivat is significant in this verse. This means that Prithu Maharaj also strictly followed the injunctions of the Shastra in receiving a spiritual master or acharya of the transcendental disciplic succession. Whenever an acharya is seen, one should immediately bow down before him. Prithu Maharaj did this properly. Therefore, the words used here are prashrayanata kandhara. Out of humility, he bowed down before the Kumaras. Gauravad yantrita sabhya prashrayanata kandhara. Vidivat pujayam chakre grihitad yar hanasanam. When the great sages accepted their reception according to the instructions of the Shastras and finally took their seats offered by the king, the king, influenced by the glories of the sages, immediately bowed down. Thus he worshipped the four Kumaras. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasta Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharya Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Vastu Chadesh Tarde Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasani Gauravanta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajkapaturubhyascha, Kripasindubhyevacha, Radhidanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So there are the four sampradayas as mentioned by Srila Prabhupada here. Brahma Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya, Kumar Sampradaya, and Rudra Sampradaya. The basic understanding is that, at least one perspective on it is that, the Vedic tradition became extremely degraded, maybe 2,000 to 3,000 years ago, like that, something, maybe three, became extremely degraded. And in the name of performing sacrifice, the Brahmins were just practically wholesale killing animals and selling the flesh as supposedly prasadam and eating the flesh themselves, and the whole Vedic tradition had become deeply undermined in that way. In fact, it had become so deeply undermined that the Supreme Personality of Godhead felt that it could not be rectified directly, meaning within itself or by Vedic, any application of Vedic standards. It needed, like you could say, a revolution. Yes, yeah, something from outside, something really revolutionary, which would turn it upside down and very drastically smash the multitude of misconceptions that were there and that were completely dominating the whole Vedic tradition. So therefore, and not just anybody could do that, even some powerful type of preacher or whatever wouldn't be able to do that. So the Lord appeared himself as Buddha and taught something which was in many ways different, and indeed specifically was preaching against the actual Vedas, that the Vedas are not right. You shouldn't follow the Vedas, but rather we have a better idea. What is that? Ahimsa Paroma Dharma Marad. It's something like that. Ahimsa, non-violence, is the Parama Dharma, the supreme Dharma. Yes. So Lord Buddha taught that and very vigorously preached against the Vedas and the Vedic tradition. Of course, basically his idea was to destroy the idea that it's fine, in fact it's good, it's the right thing to do, to do this large scale, massively large scale animal slaughter in the name of Vedic religion. Oh, Hare Krishna, Rajaraj Prabhu King. So anyway, that's what happened. And the people in general rejected the Vedas and the Vedic tradition and the different practices of the Vedas and the understanding, the world view of the Vedas, and just got into that. And sure enough, they became very non-violent. And the killing of animals stopped. And like that, things changed for the better. to some degree, at least, in significant ways. You know, it's very interesting how sometimes how Dharma can be subverted, and in the name of Dharma, people can get into serious adharma. Like our devotees, first of all, went to Indonesia back in Srila Prabhupada's time, and they found that there are certain parts, particularly Bali, but there's also other parts, which from before were still Hindu, because Malaysia, Indonesia was the last part, you would probably know better, to be converted from Hindu to Muslim. Is it about 900 years ago?
Yes.
Something like
900.
800? Yeah. Okay, so yeah, plus minus 800 years ago. The king of, was it Malaysia and Indonesia? Parasaram?
He was from Indonesia.
He was from Indonesia.
Yeah.
So Parasaram, his name was, he wanted to marry a Muslim girl. But the parents, some sort of form of Muslim royalty, they insisted that if you want that, you have to become a Muslim. So he did. And then by force, he converted the whole country. And suddenly, almost overnight, it was transformed into a Muslim state. But certain areas did not become Muslim. And Bali is the main one, and they're parts of Java, small parts, little pockets here and there of people who just since 800 years ago, they've maintained their sort of Hindu, quote-unquote, tradition. So anyway, the devotees went there and they found that there's this island, Bali, 4 million people, and they're all Hindu. In fact, percentage-wise, it is the largest percentage Hindu population of any area in the world. It's more than India. India is only like 85-87% something. But Bali is at least 95% plus Hindu. So the devotees thought, very good. Let's start preaching, and they did. And there's a nice response. But then they encountered one problem, was that the Hindus were very fond of eating beef.
Oh.
Very fond. Oh, yes. And they raised cows. Did you ever go to Bali? Did you ever go? It's an experience you should have. It's amazing. But they have these cows, and they're like little cows, and they don't give milk. They don't use them for milk. Milk or milk powder they get from Australia. And they just keep the cows to eat. It's amazing. They're kind of funny-looking animals, but you can see this is some sort of cow. So the devotees were preaching against that, or just against cow killing in general. And the Brahmins, the main Hindu, like Mahasabha, whatever, Hindu organization, got very angry and went to the government of Indonesia and had ISKCON banned. And officially on paper, we are still banned in Indonesia, although we are functioning strongly, particularly in Bali and some other areas. So just see how Dharma can get, you know, turned around. Even some very important part like that, it's very, very important. Yeah. So anyway, So Buddha stopped the killing of animals, at least to a substantial degree. But then, of course, everything is, by the arrangement of the Lord, everything is going to come to the point of Lord Chaitanya appearing 500 years ago. But to reach that point where people will be ready enough that they may be able to accept Lord Chaitanya, there had to be some other steps to gradually bring them to that point of being ready enough. So first of all, appeared after Buddha, first of all appeared Shankaracharya, who of course did not preach Vaishnavism much, as we know very well. He was preaching Mayavad, but at least he convinced the people to accept the Vedas. Again. And then following him, and through his influence, through the influence of Shankaracharya, Buddhism was driven out of India. So in India now, there's just a few places. It was completely Buddhist, totally Buddhist. But now there's just a handful of places where Buddhism is still a little strong. So then after Shankaracharya came Ramanuja. And Ramanuja established his philosophy was Vishishta Advaita. Means it is an Advaita philosophy. Yeah. It's a monistic philosophy. Vishishta Advaita means something like concrete monism. Concrete in the sense that if you have some concrete, a bar or some sort of something of concrete, and you cut through it, then you'll see it is not like one solid lump, but there's sand there, there's rocks there, and there's all different things mixed in there within the concrete. There you get these individual little different things. So in other words, his philosophy is, and that it's Advaita, means not non-dual. It's a monistic philosophy. Everything is God. Everyone is God. Vrajaraj Prabhu is God. Riti, Hare Krishna, is God. But in a certain context, as a part of the greater, like the whole slab of concrete, part of God. And then following Ramanuja, who was next? Somebody was next. I forget actually who was next. But gradually, step by step, the acharyas came, and those sampradayas became strong. And then Madhvacharya came. His philosophy is Dvaita. You see him sitting like that, two fingers. God and us, separate, two. Dvaita, it's called. Yeah. And in other words, those the four sampradayas, Brahma Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya, Kumara Sampradaya, and Rudra Sampradaya, they, in whatever the order was that they came, they were gradually bringing the understanding of the people around from that hopelessly confused state before Buddha appeared, to the point where, when Lord Chaitanya appeared, at least they were ready for the reality, the true understanding, ready enough so that many would be able to accept it, and many did. Achintya bade abhed tattva, that everything and everyone is simultaneously, although it's somewhat inconceivable, at one with the Lord, but separate from the Lord. One and different. One and different. It's an interesting concept. And therefore it's called achintya. It's not so easy to just get just like that. But if one's consciousness becomes purified a little, then it will make sense. How everything can be one with the Lord, but simultaneously not one with the Lord. Yeah. So therefore we have all these sampradayas. And step by step, well, you know what? It is generally accepted that of the other three sampradayas, the sampradaya which has a philosophy most similar to ours, although somewhat different, but still most similar, is Ramanujacharya's, even though it's monistic. But it, you know, Dvaita, the idea of Dvaita, that there's just the Lord and us, and we are just different. Just very different. And he goes into describing how there are different types of souls. And, you know, like permanently different types of souls with different natures. I mean, and not just on the level of different personalities, but on the most fundamental, foundational levels as entities. They are quite different from each other, different categories. So their philosophy is not so similar to Lord Chaitanya's. Now, you might, and certainly it's an important point, you might consider that here is King Prithu receiving the four commands. And the four Kumars, their philosophy, their understanding of reality is different from ours. And in fact, their understanding of reality... Hare Krishna, Kimanya, Asizai. Their understanding of reality is wrong. It's not actually true. It's an illusion. It's a special type of Maya. So if their philosophy is wrong, and they're teaching some sort of illusion which will only ultimately help people just get more entangled in material existence, why is King Prithu, who is a Shaktyavesh form of the Supreme Lord, why is he taking them so seriously as just great, great, great personalities? Why does he do like that? And, you know, as an example, if you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you find the description of Gopakumar going to, I think it's Tapaloka. Gopakumar is basically on his way back to Goloka Vrindavan, but on the way he stops at different important places. One of them is Tapaloka. And in Tapaloka, on Tapaloka, there are all these sages. And there's really a lot of them. And they're simply sitting in silent meditation. And you know who the leader of those sages are? They are the four Kumars. And Gopa Kumar, he arrives there, and everyone's meditating, and the Lord is appearing in front of everyone as everyone meditates. And Gopa Kumar sees the Lord. And Gopa Kumar, he's a very enthusiastic cowherd boy, really enthusiastic. And he sees the Lord everywhere, all around. And everyone's meditating, and there's total silence. But Gopa Kumar calls out, "Gopal, Gopal, Gopal!" In ecstasy, just shouting, "Gopal, Gopal!" And one of the four Kumars, I think it's Sanatan, but one of the four Kumars stops his meditation and tells Gopa Kumar, "Stop this! You don't do that. You be quiet. You sit down and meditate." And tries to explain to him that actually the best way to perceive the Lord is through the mind. It's a long story. But, in other words, he preaches to Gopa Kumar a somewhat misleading philosophy, because it's not really like that. Actually, Gopa Kumar is doing the best thing, because the best thing is kirtan. It's the best thing. That's what Gopa Kumar is doing. And it engages the mind better than just trying to do some silent meditation. So anyway, on a certain level, it appears that the four Kumars are somewhat bewildered. Their philosophy is not really, certainly not completely correct. So why would King Prithu, as a Shaktyavesh avatar of the Lord, receive them in such a way that, as Prabhupada mentions here, that they are parampara acharyas? So Prithu Maharaj was very respectful to the sampradaya acharya. So there's a very interesting point, though, which is brought out by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Navadvip Dharma Mahatmya, Parikrama Kanda, where he's actually going around with Lord Nityananda, Jiva Goswami, everyone's going around. And they come to the last island, more or less, is Rudradweep. And on Rudradweep, devotees, there's Shankarapur, the place of Shankaracharya. There's a place called Vaikuntapur, which is a place of Ramanujacharya. And there's some other place, which is the place of Madhva. And then over in Bailpakur, there is the big banyan tree, which is the place of Nimbaka, who's from the Kumar line. Yes. And what happened was that the leaders of these four sampradayas, Ramanuja, Madhva, etc., they all came to Navadvip. And when they came to Navadvip, Lord Chaitanya appeared to them. They came during their time when they were present, because they all did pilgrimage around India. And so they all met Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya instructed them all. in Achintyabhadabhaita philosophy, but then he told them, don't tell anyone. Just keep preaching this, you know, somewhat sort of questionable philosophy, and don't tell anyone about me. So actually our understanding is then that these Sampradaya Acharyas, even Shankaracharya himself, who met Lord Chaitanya also at Shankarapur, our understanding is that actually they're not in illusion. They really do understand that on the instruction of Lord Chaitanya, they preach these kind of unusual philosophies, yes. So like this, Prithu Maharaj is actually doing the right thing in receiving these, the four kamas, very, very nicely in an extremely humble way. And because also obviously we know that humility is such a vital part of the consciousness of a devotee. Without humility, you cannot really make progress. Cannot. Not really possible. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.